This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
By the way, on the show.
It is Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant on his way to Miami, where it's a balmy 65 degrees after his complaining about freezing iguanas and monsoon flag football games. And in his place today, we got Michael Bumpus sitting in. Bump, how are you?
What up, what up? How you doing?
I'm doing very well. We appreciate you coming in. This is going to be a blast this morning. We're going to start out by asking a question, and it was almost not quite an accusation because Jake Heaps is too nice to level accusations, but the question of whether Seattle in some ways is wasting Russell Wilson's prime. And that's kind of a cue, and it harkens and certainly makes any Seattle sports fan think of Felix Hernandez, where the Mariners truly did waste his prime, a guy that was a dominant pitcher and just never had the supporting cast around him when he was performing at that level to make it pay off. And waste is probably too strong a word, but maybe the better way to look at it, Bump, is whether the Seahawks have made the most of having a franchise quarterback who right now is sort of in the wheelhouse of his peak.
It almost seems like they're just now realizing exactly what they have. Earlier in Russell Wilson's career, he was a game manager. He had a great defense. The last 3 or 4 years, he's kind of come into his own with guys exiting and players being shuffled around or whatnot. And to say waste, I wouldn't say wasted. I think that they've tried to put pieces around him. And I think because of the way this offense is ran, where it's run first, lots of play action, throw the ball down the field, they haven't allowed him to really take control of a game. They do allow him to take control of the game later in the game. But I think people want to see Russell Wilson from the jump, from the very first snap, throw the ball and feel like he has control of the football game. Whereas initially, they always start running the football first. So people think that he's not being used to his full capabilities. So I kind of see that, but I don't think it's been wasted. I think that just the style of play isn't very attractive to the masses, so therefore they think that they've wasted some of his years of his career.
And that idea is there are times that I watch how the Seahawks play, and I feel that there's almost the question that the first quarter and a half or so is used to determine, okay, how much are we going to need Russell this game? How much does Russell really have to do? We're going to wait. Is this going to be one where it's, all right, Russ, you're going to have to take everything over? Or can we kind of ham and egg our way to being close in the fourth quarter and having our franchise quarterback absolutely throw it out there? The one thing, and I will point this out, that there 4 years ago, there was a question. Some people still wondered whether Russell Wilson was capable of being that upper-tier franchise quarterback. No one has that question now. And Seattle made the right calculation when it comes to that. They have built around him. Here was what Jake Heaps had to say, and it was earlier this week on Tom, Jake, and Stacey, but his perspective on how this team has been built and what it has looked like specifically over the past three seasons.
But since 2017, without question, I think that this team has squandered Russell Wilson's prime and opportunity to make Super Bowl runs. And you look at this team, and they've been through a rebuilding and retooling process, but how have they rebuilt? How have they gone about this process? And you look at the New England Patriots, and that's a team that I'm going to echo the entire offseason, and you guys might be tired of hearing me say this, but what Bill Belichick did during his career was he came in as a defensive-minded head coach, wanted to play great defense, run the football, ball control offense. Tom Brady, you are going to be a game manager in some aspects, still be a great, phenomenal quarterback in this league, but your job is to manage the game and constantly put us in good situations. At some point, he recognized that Tom Brady was in the prime of his career, was elite as elite gets, and built his team around that quarterback to help them win Super Bowls as they transitioned and moved away from all of their stalwart defensive talent.
I love Jake's point there. The one thing, and I think it's important to start out with, is to say that recalibration by the Patriots, that really came to the forefront in 2007 when they traded for Randy Moss, and all of a sudden were this record setting, and they don't lose any regular season games, and they end up, yes, they got beat by the Giants in the Super Bowl, but we all saw that season. But that was kind of about the same point in Brady's career that Russell Wilson is now at in his career. So I think it's a very interesting point of saying, hey, in Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick, you had two guys that are on the defensive side of the ball. And in Belichick's case, he's segued to a team that for 6 or 7 years was primarily known for its offense. The Patriots are back to being a defensive team, but for a little while there, what stood out was their ability on offense.
Yeah, you talk about 2007. That was 12 years ago. Tom Brady is, what, 42 years old? Mm-hmm. So he was around 30, 31 years old. That's about the same age that Russell Wilson is. I think that Russell Wilson is at a point in his career to where he's fully trusted to take over games, to really excel. And I think that you're going to see that now. I think it's you have to wait a bit. You know, he's 30, he's 31 years old. He's shown this offseason. I remember seeing him in the summertime and thinking that he's on another level. I think he's finally reached that level to where Schottenheimer and Pete Carroll, they're okay with giving him the keys and telling him to go. And they're starting to put pieces around him. You have a running back that rushed 4,000 yards in two consecutive seasons. You have a star receiver in the making, DK Metcalf. You already have a star with Tyler Lockett. You add another couple pieces on offense. You got to tighten up that offensive line. So I think that they're moving in the right direction. I wouldn't say they squandered. I just looked at his stats. When I saw the sheet of the show and what was going to be said, I went back and I just looked at Russell Wilson's stats. 2017, 3,900 yards, 34 TDs, threw for about 61% completion rate. 2018, 35 touchdowns, 7 picks. 2019, 31 touchdowns, 5 picks. So I look at his production, and it looks like he's getting better as far as production-wise. They're allowing him to throw the ball a bit more. So I think we're right in the midst of this allowing Russell to be himself in his prime. I think he has 3 or 4 more good years in his prime. You look at a guy like Aaron Rodgers, he's 36 years old. He's still getting it done. So I think we're kind of jumping the gun a bit and saying that they just squandered away his prime. I think he's in his prime, and these next 2 or 3 years will let us know what his legacy is going to look like.
We also have to remember that the team is changed over the course of his time here. And that question of did they squander it? Well, if they had been building from the ground up when Russell was in his first, second, and third season, if he had been, say, in the position Baker Mayfield is, where he's the first draft pick and you're the guy we're going to build around, and yes, it's going to start out and it's going to be tough. Troy Aikman's probably the epitome of that, right? Where you draft a quarterback and he becomes one of the cornerstones in your foundation, but it takes you some time to get the talent around him. That's not the situation the Seahawks were in when Russell was drafted. Russell was the last piece. They had their defense built. They had their running back. They had their offensive template. And for, I would say, 3 years, Russell was in a very different role on that team. And that question of there was his rookie year, there was a question about whether Seattle was squandering its championship caliber defense by starting a rookie quarterback. They've gone through a transition over these past 3 years. How they come out of it, and I think that's fascinating to think about, how they come out of it, and I love hearing you talk, and I'm looking forward to finding more about what you see the direction this offense is going, because it is going through a transition. I don't think anybody expects them to have that caliber of defense that they had back then, but nobody expects them necessarily to play the same way. So when you look at a team and how they build around a player, I think it's really important to look at that. When do they gear themselves to be good? When are they at the point where, like, okay, you've spent a lot of resources, we need to see the returns from that? Because if they had been a team that was, hey, we're going to win 3 games Russell's rookie year, and hopefully we'll be about .500 his second year, and then he gets to this point and he still hasn't made the playoffs, then you can talk about wasting. I would love to see the look on a quarterback like Carson Palmer or Phillip Rivers or some of the other guys who've had incredible careers, statistically incredible careers, who never got to a Super Bowl, in part because you just never saw them. They truly did, in some senses, have their talent wasted, where Russell's been in the playoffs all but 1 year he's been here.
And here's another thing, Danny. 360 just texted in. Tom Brady took pay cuts to make his team better, allowed Bill Belichick to get guys to put around, to get a Randy Moss and get all these other guys. Is Russell Wilson willing to take those pay cuts to help this football team do that? I think that will help his legacy and help this football team if he decides to do that. I honestly don't see Russell Wilson taking any type of pay cuts. I think all the things that, and Tom Brady's not my favorite person. He's not my favorite football player. I respect his greatness. I understand his greatness. One thing you can say about him, he was selfless and he took a pay cut to allow this team to flourish and for them to build around him. I think that's the next step. is Russell Wilson able to do whatever it takes as far as we know he'll go out there, he'll prepare, he'll be ready to go, he'll lead. Now, will he take that pay cut? You know, I think that's a big question. If he does take that pay cut, I think that'll help his legacy overall.
That's interesting. Dallas is wrestling with the exact same thing right now. And Dak Prescott, is he going to max out everything he can earn? They're staring at the possibility. He's scheduled to be a free agent. Nobody expects him to get to the open market, but he might be on a franchise tag. What's winning worth to a quarterback? And I've always been someone who's said, hey, owners don't ever take discounts. Like owners are the guys that get everything they can out of it. And anybody that thinks an owner is taking discounts should look at the direction of ticket prices over the course of 10, 20 years. But that question of what's important to a player, I think does become, and Tom Brady is the one guy who has never been someone who's like, okay, you know what? I'm going to max out my earning potential right here. You're going to have to pay me more than anybody else has ever made. It's Bump and the Stump. That's our nickname for this show, is Michael Bump is filling in for Paul Gallant. And right now it's time for us to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Huskies play Utah tonight at 5 p.m. Very tough place to play with maybe the toughest looking Pac-12 coach. Krestowiak is someone I would want absolutely no part. Is that part of Utah's sort of coach screening process? Is like, do you look like you could whoop anybody? If so, yes, you're hired Kyle Whittingham. You're hired Larry Krestowiak. Utah's a tough physical team, and I don't want to say must wins, but the Huskies need to start stacking up some victories. I think tonight's game is going to tell us a lot about whether or not they're capable of making a push toward tournament eligibility, or it's going to take a big run in the Pac-12 tournament for them to get there.
Yeah, it's important. They got to win this ball game. They're coming off of two losses, of some disappointing losses up against Oregon, gave up a 12 to 16 point lead. It's just the way that they've been losing. They need a bounce back game to instill confidence in this young team. You're led by freshmen. Your point guard is out. There are a lot of things that happen to this basketball team this year. I think this is a bounce back game. I believe they'll get it done tonight.
What to watch for?
Pro Bowl Skills Challenge. Yes, sir. Tonight, 6 p.m. Pacific. I love skill challenges. I don't know if it's remembering the superstars that used to be on, which I know for legal reasons why we don't see superstar challenges anymore, where you've got Olympians swimming against heavyweight boxers. I know why we don't. There's too much liability. But, man, those things are so awesome. Would you rather watch? There's going to be, I saw the different drills tonight. There's a thread the needle challenge where a quarterback's going to try to throw a ball through a target while a DB is there to defend it. Or would you rather watch guys play different sports like ping pong? Like, would you want to watch Russell? Who's the best quarterback at ping pong? I'd like to see a multidiscipline weird sport competition.
Yeah, I'm with that. I would like to see him do something that all most football players think they're basketball players. You know, have them do a three-point contest or have them do like a closest to the pin golf thing. My experience in the locker rooms is everyone's a hooper, everyone's a golfer. Mix it up a little bit and see these guys ball out.
I will say that one of my favorite memories covering the Seattle Seahawks, it happened, it must have been like 2003, 2004. Eastern Washington, Seahawks were training at Cheney then. Eastern Washington had a good hoops team that year. I believe they ended up going to the tournament. They had Alvin Snow from Franklin High School and I think the little Pariseau kid from over at Shadle Park. They were a good college basketball team. And they got into a pickup game with some of the Seahawks. And Seneca Wallace, Corin Robinson, and Daryl Jackson, some of them don't have the best hoop skills, but all of them were absolutely insane athletes. And Daryl Jackson can hoop. Watching a highly competitive game in that scenario, and it lasted for about 10 minutes until some of the Seahawks coaches heard that, oh, yeah, you know what? Your Pro Bowl wide receiver, he's down there dunking on fools. And they came in and like, okay, that's enough of that. We don't need to see it. Unbelievable. It was absolutely unbelievable.
Fouls for days.
What to watch for?
Zion Williamson made his long-awaited NBA debut. He scored 17 consecutive points in the fourth quarter. He ended up getting pulled out because they didn't want to stretch his minutes. He's been sitting out because of a knee injury. He is an electric player, Bump.
Zion, Zion, Zion. I was super excited, man, seeing the lefty get out there. He looks like he needs to shed some pounds. He looks a little heavy right now, but you see the potential in this kid. You said it's 17 straight points, 4-for-4 from the three-point line. He said, man, when you're injured, your knees hurt, all you can do is shoot spot-up jumpers. It came in handy last night. I'm super excited for the Pelicans and for the NBA. This will be the guy to transition once LeBron and KD and all those older guys get out. Zion put on the show last night.
Now, Shannon Sharpe has already, and when my ears perked up when I heard this. At first, I was like, oh, I'm really interested. And I'm like, whoa, it's a little bit too soon. Here was his comparison for Zion Williamson.
He and Lonzo can be Gary Payton and Sean Kemp.
Yeah.
They nicknamed Sean Kemp the Rain Man because it looked like he was just falling out of the sky.
Yep.
He was up so high. And this kid has that kind of athleticism.
He does. I think you got to have at least one alley-oop between the two before we start invoking the hallowed name of GP and Sean Kemp, because when they said it, Bump, all I could think of, that combination was absolutely out of this world.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. That might be a little premature. And can Lonzo play defense? Because GP was the glove, man. He'd lock you down. I don't see the grit in Lonzo Ball. Wish the best for those two, but to say GP and Sean Kemp right now, a little premature, but we'll see.
Our playoff coverage brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. And now we go to the professor, John Clayton, who's going to join us for our morning drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, you all cleared for the friendly skies?
Yes, indeed. I was able to get my renewal for 5 more years, and that's good for TSA and Global Entry and all that stuff. And it was great to be able to go there. And the person that that took me in and gave me my fingerprints and all that actually was listening to the show yesterday morning at 7:15.
No kidding. So they heard they knew they had a celebrity waiting for them. That's fantastic. Eli Manning's retired, Professor. 16 seasons in the NFL. What do you make of his career?
It's a good one. I mean, borderline Hall of Fame. I guess, you know, you would think automatically the fact that he won 2 Super Bowls and beat Tom Brady twice, that's going to put him in. But remember, Phil Simms has never been able to get in, and he won 2 Super Bowls. But I think ultimately it's not going to be first ballot, but he's going to be a Hall of Famer. I think you look at the fact that he never really missed a game when he was hurt. I mean, he was benched once, and of course that cost a head coach a job because they should not have benched him. And of course he got benched last year when they went to a young quarterback and Daniel Jones, but I mean a very good quarterback. I mean, he's the one who made the move that he didn't want to go to the Chargers. He wanted to go to another team, end up going to the Giants, and was an institution with them.
John, is it style points that he's missing? Because I'm just underwhelmed by Eli Manning, and I look at his stats and it makes sense. He should be in the Hall of Fame, but there's just something about him that doesn't make me buy into it. Is it just his style? What do you think it is?
500 record, probably. Maybe his personality, because, I mean, he's kind of a quiet type of guy, a guy that doesn't have a demonstrative leadership, kind of like, he's not like his brother, Peyton. But, I mean, the fact that, he won 117 and he lost 117, and, you know, he didn't have a great finish over the last 4 or 5 years, that probably goes against him. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, that's why when I say borderline Hall of Fame, there's something that I kind of question, too. But I know in the end, it's New York. It's the Giants. He'll make it at some point.
Yeah, I agree. There's two different conversations. Should he be in? And that's a debate. Will he be in? It's almost certain that he's going to get in just because of where he played and what he won. I would ask this. Who had the better career? And Phillip Rivers isn't done yet. But as of this point, because they were in the same draft, Eli decided he didn't want to play in San Diego. He's the first human being ever known in the history of mankind to say, no, I don't want to go to San Diego. But he didn't. And they ended up switching places. Which of those two guys do you think has had the better career?
Honestly, I kind of think Phillip Rivers has, even though he hasn't been to a Super Bowl. I think that you look at his numbers. I think his numbers have been a little bit better. I know that he went to a championship game against the Patriots, and of course in that game he was playing with an ACL tear and all that stuff and had to have surgery, and he came back from that. But I don't know. I kind of think Phillip was a little bit better. But boy, I mean, you talk about that 2004 class, pretty special. You have Ben Roethlisberger, Matt Schaub was in there. I mean, but, you know, you have three guys that, or at least are in the conversation for Hall of Fame.
John, the 49ers are taking on the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Two great tight ends in Kittle and Kelce. Who has the better tight end?
Oh, I think Kittle's phenomenal. I mean, I'm just amazed how he's able to catch the ball. He's a good blocker. He's able to run after the catch. He's so powerful. So, I mean, you're right. There's two really good tight ends. But, you know, and, you know, one thing with Kelce, he's faster than you think. So, I mean, these guys are both really, really good. And but I still think Kittle right now might be a little bit of the better one, even though it's pretty close.
John, do you like the Pro Bowl?
Kind of. I mean, I'm not enamored by it. I mean, I would. Let's put it this way. I remember it was a Super Bowl down in Miami was the last time I went to the game, and I regretted going to it. I don't think it's something I would go to, but you know, and it's something you kind of moderately watch. The thing that I like about it, it gets out you know, pretty much where players and front office people are voting for the, because again, you can kind of see who's the alternates and who's going to be in the. So it, from my database, it works out. But I mean, from my eye appeal, it doesn't work out.
John, Richard Sherman and Revis got into a little Twitter battle the other day. What do you make of that situation? Sherman acted like he wasn't going to jump in that conversation. He just couldn't resist.
Yeah.
What was your thoughts on that situation?
I didn't understand Revis whatsoever. I mean, he's questioning a fellow Hall of Fame guy because, again, Revis is going to make the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And certainly, you know, that I think down the line, Richard Sherman would too. But it's like you're questioning somebody that nobody throws on. It's like, what's he supposed to do? Is he supposed to be, I mean, he's, you know, comes into the league about a 4.55 guy as far as speed. So he's not, if he only when necessary, is he going to be the guy that's trailing somebody and, you know, putting, you know, man to man all across the field. And, you know, I didn't get what Revis was trying to get to.
Here's what I was surprised by. The picture that Revis took of his television, like it was kind of a depressing room. There was no art hung on the walls. I mean, it's a big TV, but I mean, of course it's going to be a big TV, but it was kind of depressing. Like I wondered, I was like, come on, man. Like you've got a budget for some interior decoration. Now maybe he doesn't want to spend any money on that, but I was kind of sad for him. I was like, if I had that much money, I know I'd have a nicer little setup for watching games.
Yeah. Maybe because I mean, he's an Aliquippa PA guy where Mike Ditka and several others, maybe he was back in his old Aliquippa place.
Could be. John, yesterday, Jaron Reed, somebody who studies and looks at different film had made sort of a suggestion of what the Seahawks could do with their salary cap space. And he suggested an average annual salary for Jaron Reed between $8 and $10 million. And Jaron Reed responded on Twitter calling it disrespectfully low. I don't know what Reed's market will end up being. But what I took away from that comment, which has since been deleted, is that he's got really big expectations for what he's going to get. And I think that those expectations, Seattle probably isn't going to come anywhere close to meeting those expectations.
No, because that's the number I've been saying now. And so I guess I've been disrespectful to him, too. But when you start to look at some of the numbers, I mean, you know, he's not coming off the 10.5 sack season. He's coming off a season where he had a 6-game suspension. And I'm thinking more of a short term deal. There's a prove it type of deal at $8 to $10 million a year. Maybe a 1-year deal to try to see if he can get the sacks to get him over, you know, $15 million. But no, I get the idea that he has high expectations. And then, when you look at some of the top 100s and things like that, he's in the 50s. And when you get into the 50s, you're not getting the $10 million plus. So I think that the numbers seems to go against him. And I guess he's not going to be happy about that.
John, do you think someone's going to pay him what he wants?
No. I don't think. I mean, right now, like, you can't question it because, you know, it's free agency and anybody can do one thing. An interior guy that has the ability to get to the quarterback, you know, can get good money. But I think right now it's between 8 and 10.
Yeah, I'm going to be fascinated. This free agent market is going to be fascinating for a number of different things, not the least of which is the uncertainty about the CBA in the future. That question of if it's going to be a hot market, if it's a hot market, maybe. But I've also heard some people think that this market's going to be slower than it's been. I'll be interested to see how that shapes up as we get closer and closer to that, John.
No, it's going to be fun. But of course, the big thing is going to be a quarterback market because you have so many quarterbacks that are going to be on the move.
Yes, you're going to have a ton, and that's going to eat up a ton of open salary cap space. Professor, we appreciate it. We're happy you're pre-checked out and ready to fly. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Okay, sounds good.
So you can hear him, well, after us, 10 to noon, 710 ESPN Seattle, and also in the afternoon with Bob, Dave, and more. Pete Carroll brought more than just his coaching staff to the Pro Bowl. He brought a hoop. We're going to tell you why that could pay dividends for Seattle in the long term. That's next on Danny and Gallant with Michael Bumpus sitting in the bump and the stump.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus sitting in today for Paul Gallant, who's en route to Miami, which has warmed up nicely for him. Pete Carroll, also in Florida. Another guy who made that trek. He brought a little baggage with him, though. Not just his entire coaching staff, Michael Bumpus, but he had a basketball hoop that was brought in there for the players in the NFC to warm their way up to. And when I heard it, I thought, well, that sounds very much like Pete Carroll.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all. You know what he's doing right now? He's recruiting. This is a recruiting trip. He's like, hey, you want to play for a coach who brings in a basketball hoop, who's 68 years old, but seems like he's 45 years old? Pete Carroll knows what he's doing.
He certainly does. Here's a little bit of sound of him interacting with his team, working with his players, and getting them pumped up about shooting some hoops.
We got to make the most of our time. And we got to have a freaking great time. So that means no matter what we're doing, we're competing. Can somebody show a little bit of skills and prowess and all that? Can somebody?
Pick a number between 1 and 2. Pick a number between 1 and 2. One. No, it's 3.
Come on!
The fact that he did it, when Pete first got here, there was a big part of me that wondered how this was going to work with professionals. That, and I don't think I'm alone. I think a lot of people wondered. It's one thing when you're a college coach and you've got people that are excited and getting a stage and an opportunity that they've never had before. I remember the first practice that I saw, they laid out bags and they had guys run the bags. And I don't think I'd seen that at a high school practice when I was covering King Cove football for the Seattle Times. And I wondered to myself, I was like, are NFL players, when's the last time do you have your guys run bags, Bump?
No, I do not.
What would you have thought if you had gotten to Washington State even, or when you got to the Seahawks and you're at your training camp, like, hey, we're going to run bags?
I don't know. You know, I think if the coach sold it, I think that's the thing about Pete Carroll. Whatever he does, he sells it. He does it with conviction. So then people have no choice but to buy in. Now, if he laid the bags out and he was unsure about it and there was no confidence in what he was doing, guys were like, man, what the heck are we doing? But it's just the way that Pete Carroll does things. He throws the bags out there and makes it the greatest competition of all time. He brings a basketball hoop in and makes it the greatest things of all time. It's just the way he portrays himself and the way he communicates. Makes guys believe and buy in and have fun no matter what they're doing.
And that is something that I think everybody's seen. I've certainly noticed. If there have been any players that didn't buy in or thought that stuff was corny, those players didn't last long. They were like TJ Houshmandzadeh, who did not make it to the first game of the first regular season, where Seattle, he was guaranteed to make his $8 million. And they're like, yeah, okay, we're going to pay you, but you're not playing on this team. That buy-in that's there. And I think there's something that happens when guys do that, is they kind of let go of the pretension of being cool, or I'm too cool for this, or I'm too good for this. And I've come to realize that kind of it's not hokey. When he gets guys to participate and do stuff like that and play, he's getting them to kind of put themselves back in what it was like when you were doing something for fun.
Which is awesome. I'm sorry.
It's great. It's absolutely fantastic. But he gets them to, it's no longer this, oh, I don't want to do that because look, I'm a professional. I make me. Guys get into it. And you hear in the meeting room, you hear how they respond to shooting competitions and those sort of things. And it brings an incredible amount of energy. And I think it's part of what builds chemistry.
It's all about breaking that ice, right? You get all this money. You get to NFL. You're like, I finally made it. This is a business. You keep hearing when people describe the NFL, it's a business. You know, you got to show up with your suit and tie ready to go. And he kind of just breaks that stereotype. It is a business. You do have to perform. There are expectations. But let's not forget that this is a game. You're supposed to have fun playing this game. And most football players play their best when they're having fun, when they're comfortable. And he does a great job of doing that, whether it be the basketball, shooting the tug of wars that I've seen, the chip and putting contest. There's always something that he's doing that seems gimmicky to some guys. But if you get in that locker room, you got to remember, these are 22 to 26-year-olds mainly. You got some older veterans in there, but guys still like to have fun. And when you bring the fun back into football, especially in such a stressful environment like a locker room in the NFL, you're going to get the most out of your players. That's one way of doing it. Now, Belichick, he does the other way. Both styles work.
Yeah, that idea of finding a style that does work for you and how it resonates with people. You mentioned Bump. He's recruiting. Don't underestimate the value of that, because I think we're seeing it right now with Jadeveon Clowney. Clowney got himself into a position over the course of his negotiations with Houston where he kind of decided, okay, I'm going to decide where I'm going to go. I'm going to choose. I don't want them to trade me to Miami, so I'm not going to sign the offer sheet so they can trade me to Miami. I'm going to have a say in where I go. If they're going to trade me, I'm going to sign off on where I go. And he signed off and agreed to go to Seattle. And the one thing that I don't know if he's going to re-sign with the Seahawks. I'm not sure how the market's going to go. The one thing I know is that the way Pete Carroll has structured that team and the way he coaches guys and the way he runs things has given Seattle the best chance of re-signing him, because he loved how it was to play here. That is that. I don't know how much of a difference that makes and whether that's just a tiebreaker, but the idea that players like the environment that he's created, and even if you look at it from the outside and think, oh, it might be corny and those millionaires get sick of it, they actually don't. And the fact that Clowney, when he left, went upstairs to John Schneider's office and said, I loved playing here this year, that's significant. And this is an opportunity for him to have exposure for a bunch of Pro Bowlers.
Yeah, it is. He's getting in front of the best football players in the NFL, and he's selling himself. He's selling the program. He's selling the organization. Like, look, this work environment is like nothing you've ever seen before. We've all had jobs where we just dreaded going to work every single day. I doubt it's like that in the Seattle Seahawks organization, simply because of things like that. You look at Pete Carroll after practice. He always brings the guys up after practice. Now, we're in the media, so we're not allowed to actually get into the huddle and see what, hear what's being said, but there's always some kind of laughter. There's always some kind of joke. When there's a break, it seems like guys aren't rushing to get off the field and go home. They hang around. They like each other. They like hanging out. So it's working, man. It's a different kind of culture, and now he has the opportunity to sell that culture and himself at the Pro Bowl.
There's an energy to it. There's no other way to describe it, is that there's an energy to it. And I heard him describe one of the reasons that he plays music during practice is that it's an opportunity for a guy, if maybe he's going to tune out and otherwise would just kind of go into his own zone. He's not really. Maybe there's something in that song that he grabs onto. Maybe there's something that brings, and giving guys the most different, as many opportunities as possible to have something that they grab onto. And instead of disengaging, to engage, I think it's been a huge benefit. And like, honestly, the shooting competitions and the basketball, I guess it was Darius Slay, performed pretty well. Chandler Jones was another guy that was able to shoot hoops. They brought Steve Kerr in. He came in. Kerr's one of the guys that have been around there. And I'm fairly certain that he lost in a shooting competition to Brian Walters, who was a kick returner from Juanita High School that had then gone back and played college back east, who beat Steve Kerr in a shooting competition.
That's awesome. You beat Steve Kerr, man. You talk about that the rest of your life. One of the greatest shooters of all time, you beat Steve Kerr. Again, every football player wishes they were a hooper at some point in time. Why not bring a hoop in and let these guys demonstrate?
They do. And in true NBA fashion, Kerr, when I asked him about that, said, well, there might have been a little bit of home court advantage because the floor is sloped in there. He wasn't going to let Walters have the – it wasn't a clean victory. It wasn't on a neutral site. It is Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus is in with us this morning. The Seahawks do have one cornerback who's at the Pro Bowl with Pete Carroll. And Shaquille Griffin is a great reason to be optimistic about the other cornerback. We'll explain why next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Right on cue, make a reference to Shaquille Griffin, providing a little bit of hope for anyone about the other cornerback and the 206. Let's hope Shaq does become that other guy. Is in the Hawks draft or sign someone much better, and Shaq moves to number two with Trey Flowers becoming the backup. That's not what I had in mind at all. It is Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus is in with us, and that gives you a sense. I think many people have reached a conclusion, Bump, that that Trey Flowers had a tough year. And I'm not sure if I'm willing to go that far. I do know that he did not take the step forward that a lot of people were hoping for.
Yeah, I think it's you're only as good as your last game. And I think that's what people are seeing. His last couple of games, he struggled. And, you know, you pose this question, is he better? And I went back and looked at the stats. His rookie year, 67 tackles, 0 sacks, 6 passes defended, 0 interceptions. This year, 82 tackles, 2 sacks, 8 passes defended, and 3 interceptions. So he's gotten better. The knock on him, he was third on the team in penalties. He had like 7 or 8 penalties. So he has gotten better. But when you don't perform at a high level the last 2 or 3 games, that's all people are going to remember. He had his good moments. He had his bad moments. It's his second year. I think he deserves another year to try to get it right. But I'm not opposed to bringing guys in to push him because it's all about competition. And we know that that's how Pete Carroll lives his life, all through competition.
Couldn't agree with you more. The idea, and here's what I think that where people are making a mistake. Anyone who says he's not the guy, you can't go back to him, is wrong. I don't know if he's going to be the guy. And this season was discouraging in some respects that he can't get past the penalties. Because what's happening on the penalties, and you've heard Pete basically say this, that he's in really good position, and he kind of panics at the last second. He kind of panics, and I think it relates to the fact that he's been a safety. And he's in a new position as a cornerback where you're running and you've got your back to the ball in some respects and you don't see it and it's different. And he panics and he grabs. He can't keep playing if he keeps doing that. But the fact that he doesn't get over that doesn't mean that he won't get over it this next year. And that's where I put to Shaquille Griffin, because I think a lot of people felt about Shaquille last season exactly how they feel about Trey Flowers right now. And I'm not sure about you, Bump, but I'm really encouraged. I think Shaquille Griffin is a long-term fit here in Seattle.
And where is Shaquille right now, Danny? Where is he at?
He's in the Pro Bowl.
Pro Bowl, baby. You know, I'm not saying Trey Flowers is going to be a Pro Bowl, but there's a process to this. You hit around the head. You go from a safety to where you can see the whole play develop to now you're a corner to where you're pretty much banking on the body language of the guy that's in your zone or the guy that you are guarding. There has to be some type of transition period there, and I think that's what he's going through. He played a little better this year. Did he have a lot of penalties? Yes. Could he have set the edge better when coming down and to make tackles? Yes. There are always things that he can get better at, but just to say throw this guy away, he's done, I wouldn't do that right now. I'd bring a guy in, I'd push him and see if he can compete, but he's done enough to at least have an opportunity to keep that spot or lose that spot.
Shaquille Griffin is at the Pro Bowl, and in cut number 4, he talked about this sort of being a stepping stone in some respects, or more like something that he feels that he needs to sustain for the rest of his career.
You know, just after the year I had, you know, now I just got to build off that. You know, this is somewhere I want to be, you know, from now on. You know, being that guy that can be in the Pro Bowl, be an All-Pro player. And, you know, that's the goal that I'm setting next. And, you know, just an honor to be here.
There are players who, when they reach a threshold like this, it's never the same for them again. They reach a new level, and that becomes kind of the new normal for him. That's the hope. And I'll look at Trey Flowers, and I'm hoping that next year he takes the same step that Shaquille Griffin took this year, from a guy who, okay, he's out there and he's able to show you some things that are encouraging, but he needs to be more consistent. And Shaquille Griffin became more consistent. I don't know if Flowers will get there. And I do think that you should look and explore the possibilities of bringing in someone to compete, but I don't want to rule it out and say anybody who's come to a conclusion about Trey Flowers is coming to one way too soon in my mind.
Yeah, way too soon. And what Trey Flowers should do is, man, talk to Shaq. What did he do? What was his mentality like? You know, Shaq was honest with himself, almost too honest. He gave himself a D, I think, as a grade during the offseason. I wouldn't say a D, Shaq, maybe C+, C-, but Trey just needs to get around guys who are doing what he's doing and have done what he wants to do. And that's Shaq Griffin. Pick his brain. What did you do in the offseason? Watch all this film. This is the time where you can be brutally honest with yourself. You lock yourself in your room. You put on your projector, your TV, wherever you are, and you just break down that film. You be honest with yourself. That's the greatest thing about sports, is that there's instant feedback. There's film. The eye in the sky does not lie. You put on that film, and you'll see what you need to work on. And I'm sure the coaches have given him advice of what he needs to work on. So now it's all about retaining that information and putting in the work this offseason to come back and being ready to compete in the summertime when it's time to roll.
Dave Wyman is someone who's spent a lot of time looking at and talking about Trey Flowers. And I think his observations, he's got a lot of confidence. In cut number 5, he talked about what he sees for Trey Flowers' future.
I think Trey Flowers is – he's going to be okay. I think he's going to – and if he takes that step – but one of the things about him that I like the most is he's old school. I don't know if you remember this, Jim. We talked to him one time. We were interviewing him out in the hallway. You brought up the fact that somebody had him ranked, you know, at this level, and he goes, all due respect to him but and to you and everything, but I really don't care what anybody thinks. I hold myself to my own standards. So he has that same type of thing where he would probably give himself, you know, maybe a C or a C minus. I mean, you get three interceptions as a corner, you're doing something right.
And getting some more consistency and taking the penalties out of the equation. The other thing that Flowers does, and this is something Shaq became great at this year, you have to tackle in this defense. If you're a corner and Richard Sherman, for all of the different things people will say, Richard Sherman is one of the better tackling corners that you're going to see. And Trey Flowers certainly doesn't hesitate to stick his nose up in and be part of the run defense, which is a must in this defense.
Yeah, you got to be able to tackle, especially at that corner position. If you're if you're asked to tackle, that means that the running back either broke a couple play a couple tackles and now he's on you right now. And I just want to caution people. This is his second year playing in this position. He is a safety. Yes, there are things that he needs to work on. But if you break down the film, you look at his technique, he's starting to believe. And I think that's why Dave Wyman is confident in him, because he sees that he's in position to make plays. Now it's just about trusting. This third year is going to tell us a lot.
That word trust that you just used, that's something that Wyman said when he was talking about Trey Flowers as well.
You know, the pass interference penalties that he had, he just needs to trust himself because he has coverage on every one of the PIs that I saw him commit. He was in the right position. He just had to turn his head around and not grab the guy, and he just didn't trust that, you know, that happened. So that's something he needs to work on. But from the feedback that we've gotten, at least from the listeners and fans and everything, I think it's over the top on the criticism of Trey Flowers. And if he has that same kind of year as Shaquille, you know, next year, then I mean he's going to be fine. But I still think they need to go get some corners.
Go get some corners. You can never have too many corners, and that is something that the Seahawks have been fairly good at identifying. I go back to Richard Sherman. I think one of the reasons the Seahawks were able to draft him in the fifth round, one of the reasons he got to there, is because his college time, he was making the transition from wide receiver to corner. And some of that learning curve that he experienced in college, I think Trey Flowers is kind of going through that right now. It's not switching sides of the ball, but man, safety and corner are just in the body mechanics are very, very different positions.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and how many rookies do you see just come in and light it up? Everyone's going to say DK. Yes, DK did his thing. He lit it up. But there aren't too many first-year, second-year guys who just have it all figured out. You know, this is a fast game. You're playing a different position. You go from freelancing to locking down one side of the field or locking down one corner. So you're right. The mechanics are different. You know, you line up as a corner. Your eyes are on the defender right now. To where a safety, you're looking at the big picture, the grand scheme of things. So it narrows your vision, and it puts a lot more pressure on you because your mistakes are going to be amplified. So, you know, I would tell people just to hang in there with Trey Flowers. Yes, he had his struggles. Yes, he was third on the team in penalties. He did have three interceptions. He had his good moments. He had his bad moments. That's all about becoming a professional in this league. Again, this third year will tell us a lot about this man.
It's Danny and Gallant, Michael Bumpus in for Paul Gallant today. Our playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. We've got another pinch hitter joining us next. Jake Heaps is going to be with us, and he's down at Orlando at the Pro Bowl. We'll talk to him next for Blue 42.